Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of A Gem of a Secret podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday. Today, I'm wearing one of my No Offense outfits. It is beautiful. It is like a go-go outfit with feathers on the bottom, and I have my hair done up in a very nice bun. So today, on releasing this podcast, we are going to talk about the submersible and what happened with the four billionaires and the one teenage boy. At the time of filming this, and I actually did wait to film this because I wanted to know what the rest of the story was, there is mostly a conclusion to the story at this point, where all five passengers on board sadly have lost their lives. It does turn out that they were able to find what they are calling a catastrophic event, and within the search field, they were able to find pieces of the Titan. And so... we have an answer to the question. And I know that I was one of those people that actually wasn't making a lot of jokes on the internet, or I don't think I actually made any. And I know that people have this idea of eat the rich, and there's a lot of feelings going around about this, because a billionaire has the ability to, like, you know, feed the hungry, change the world, right? And then these people spend $250,000 to go explore a boat, right? And of course, they lost their lives, and that's incredibly sad. And I don't think anybody's actually saying that. Actually, there are some people who are actually, like, cheering the death of these people, which I think is really sad. But there's another piece of this story that I think is really important to understand, is that when you do, like, so right now, I would not consider myself to be very wealthy. I have a lot more than a lot of the other drag queens in my field, but I don't consider myself to be very wealthy. I had a lot of privilege in the sense of I was able to go to college, I was able to get a job in my field, I worked really hard in my field, I kept getting promoted, and now I'm a manager. And so I do have a little extra, I have a little bit more money than my counterparts in this field. One thing that I do want to say with that is that I understand what it's like having disposable income. And I even, over the holiday season, I took my friends, my husband and my friend, on an all-expense-paid trip to New York to see a musical, because none of us had been to New York. Well, actually, some of us had been, but we've never seen a Broadway musical, but we saw a Broadway musical on Broadway, and then we came back the next day. And even when we were in New York, we were really tired, so I got a hotel room for all of us so we could just take, like, a four-hour nap before the show. And then we flew back the next day, and I paid for all of that. And I know that those kind of experiences, because I grew up very, very, very broke, very, very poor, in a lot of different circumstances, not as poor as you think, but I grew up very poor, in the realm of we didn't have the newest. We had what we had to survive. And my mom made a very comfortable living for all of us. And I will never not appreciate how much work she went through to raise two children by herself in a nice house. I will never forget that. My mom was not ever in between jobs. She was a hard worker and went from multiple job to multiple job. All of that is to say, my perspective on this when it comes to money is a little bit different. Like, I actually think that I'm incredibly terrible with money because I never really had it. Like, so when I get it, I seem to just waste it because I want to be able to get this thing or get that thing. I remember when I had my first job, my first full-time job, the first paycheck I got, which was like $456 for 2 weeks of work when I was working full-time or something like that, I went and bought an Xbox and a GameCube with it. So even from a very young age, I was really bad with money. And so when I look at this situation, I know that I've... like when I go to the grocery store, I don't necessarily try to find the best deals and discounts and things like that. And I know people are like, we're talking about billions of dollars. We're talking about money that is so unheard of that you can't even think about what it can buy. And the thing is, these people, these individuals, some of them came from money. And so they might not necessarily know the struggle that I'm talking about. But I guess what I'm getting at, the bottom line, is what people decide to do with their money is their business. And I don't necessarily condemn them for it. However, what I do believe is that if you do make that much money, you should be doing everything in your power to change the world for the better. And that also goes in line with saying we do have free will as human beings, that it's not necessarily our responsibility to take care of our fellow man. I actually have seen a lot of accounts recently of where people do not take care of their fellow man. I had a friend recently who's had their car window knocked out for the fourth time. I saw, like, I read the article before about how, Portland offers all of these, electronic scooter things, right? Or, yeah, like these scooters, and they end up like in the Willamette. Like, they just end up, like, tons of them just end up in the water because people just throw them in there. And these are supposed to be things that are offered to us at a very low rate to be able to get around and have, like, clean living and all of these things. And we don't respect it. I don't feel like we respect our world. We don't respect our fellow man. We don't respect our country. And when people talk about the concepts of, like, well, I don't feel like I have to, and that's true. You don't have to do these things. You don't have to put your scooter back. You don't have to help out your fellow man. You don't have to, donate to charity. You don't have to be a part of the betterment of the world. You don't have to. Nobody said you did. And some people are products of their experiences where they don't feel that they need to. And so I sit in this realm of seeing, like, yeah, I'm scared of deep water, sure, but I have always been so fascinated by the Titanic as well. I've looked at pictures that people have taken. I want to go visit a museum, with stuff taken, with, like, historical artifacts from the Titanic as well. And I just think that it's a really sad thing that happened. And how people deal with the grief of other people is not necessarily my argument to police, even though that's what it sounds like I'm doing. I just recognize that if I was in that position, which I don't think I ever would be, but if I was in that position where I was running out of air, and being scared for my life, I know that I would hope there were people out there, tons of people out there, hoping that I would survive regardless of how much money I had. I guess that's my point. Now, looking at the articles, because these, like, they keep getting updated, like, every minute and whatever, it does look like the catastrophic event, which, is the implosion of the craft, right, which would have killed them all instantly. It does seem like it probably happened right around the time that they lost contact with it. And the thing is, and I'm going to say this, as heartless as this sounds, that's kind of the best scenario in this case, because that means it was quick, opposed to the other scenario where they were slowly running out of oxygen and, slowly, slowly, slowly dying. And I think that that's there. And then also people kept saying, like, what if the lights were out, right? So you'd be slowly dying in a very dark space. And, that kid in there with his dad, like, and having those last few moments with, like, my mom or my dad would be the most heartbreaking thing in the world. I also was talking to my friends about how they potentially, like, they were down there for days, and let's say they did survive, they were using the restroom and that tiny bag that they had in there as well. And so just, like, the humiliation and the death and the, like, just little things like that, especially if there was no lights and things like that. And it just really gets to me thinking about that whole entire situation. I would also hope that other billionaires and millionaires would take this, seeing how the general public reacts to situations like this. Maybe it might be a wake-up call for some to give back. I had said on the podcast a long time ago about how people think that, like, a millionaire like Beyonce does not give back, and it's also just because Beyonce doesn't actually broadcast all the things she does. And I don't think that necessarily a billionaire or a millionaire would have to talk about their philanthropy and all of those things that they do with their money. That's not necessarily our business. I know that fair hiring practice and what a person, how a person got their money is really important. I do. Where I cringe specifically is when you find out somebody's like, yeah, like, this was all me. This was all my skills. I got here on my own. And then you found out that, like, somebody's, like, father was, like, a record label producer or something like that. So maybe not the richest person in the world, but they were able to get you into that 1% of people, or less than 1% of people who actually make it. Or when you found out that somebody, like, gave them $150,000 for a startup, you're like, I did this from the ground up and whatever. I had this idea and I made a difference. And I think that's really great when people remember their starts and remember where they came from. But I also think it's realistic to say, let's paint the whole picture. Let's paint the whole story of how somebody got to where they are. Because then when we have these conversations and we have these dialogues, then we can actually talk about morality. Because when you're like, oh my gosh, I love that she did this, I love that she did that, I love that he did this, I love that he did that, but then you're missing a key piece of the puzzle, then it really makes it really difficult to understand where somebody was really coming from in this regard. I've been finding that with the way that I view my self and my money, that I do love to be able to share it with other people. I do believe in donating to charity. I love throwing charity events. I like to have the opportunity to give back as much as I could. I was one of those kids who was on, I think in elementary school I had free lunch, and then in high school I had reduced lunch because of my mom's income. I remember when there was a school trip I might not get to go. I remember that we rarely ever bought new clothes. One of my favorite times of the year was like when we went to back to school shopping, because when a funny thing is, I said, I think about it now, that stuff really isn't that expensive, like pencils, pens, colored markers and stuff like that. Just I never really considered that, because that was always one of my favorite times, and I never necessarily got a new backpack. A lot of the stuff in our house came from Goodwill. A lot of the items that we had came from garage sales. Like, I love garage sale shopping. That's where I got a lot of the stuff. Even in my home today, most of the stuff is stuff that's been given to us. I remember when I made my first big boy purchase of a washer dryer. I bought a washer dryer with my husband, and I paid, they were on sale, but I went to the store, I found the ones I wanted, and I bought them, and I was so excited. And the second big purchase I ever did was I bought in the window air conditioner that was like $600, something like that. And I was so proud of myself. And then I did one other purchase in my adult life where I bought a very, very, very expensive backpack from like a Coach store, just because I wanted it. And that purchase makes me feel so, like when I use the backpack, it makes me feel so good because I was able to afford this thing. And I know that those things are small, and some people are like, oh yeah, I wear designer shoes, or I buy nicer clothes and whatever. But I was one of those people who, like, when I went to the Buckle, I was like, oh, I like these jeans, and I'd see that they were over like $40. I would just be like, oh, that's not my journey. I was always in Goodwill clothes. I'm in even right now. I mean, sorry, I'm in full drag right now. But even so, like when I'm out of drag, I still wear a lot of Goodwill clothes. They're great. They're cheap, they're inexpensive. I just don't think that that's where I want to spend my money. Like when I go out, like even yesterday, like my friend had their birthday and I spent like $200 on their gift, and I was like, yeah, this is for you and this is going to be great, whoop de whoop de whoop. And that was important to me. Like, let's spend money on that. I also spent a lot of money on my drag, and since it's a drag podcast, I'm going to talk about this too. Like when I book a headliner, it could be anywhere between like 15,000, sorry, $1,500 to $5,000, and that money usually you get to, just pay for it with a deposit. Like, so their deposit might be $1,500 because their booking is 3,000, and then I have to just hope and pray that I get enough attendance in the door to be able to pay for my headliners, and if I can't, then it just comes out of my budget, and I don't necessarily have a lot in my savings. But it's one of those things of where I believe in giving back to my community as much as I can. And I used to, especially when I lived in Grand Junction, Colorado, I used to be involved in so many different organizations and giving back things and protests and demonstrations that I felt like I was going crazy. My On This Day on Facebook and my Time Hop was talking about all the things that I had been involved in. And I realized that I don't necessarily miss being that active in my community, because it does paint a target on your back. There is a balance between how much you want to give back and your mental health. Portland has really taught me to prioritize my mental health in that way. So, where I want to end this conversation about the submersible is that it is sad that people lost their lives. We could say all day long what they could and couldn't do with their money, but that's not necessarily up for us to say. And actually, a really interesting point about this is I remember one of my friends, and we might have talked about this on the podcast before, I'm not sure, One of my friends, who's a drag artist who was on Dracula, that did this thing where somebody handed them like a $20 bill, or it was either a one to a 20, I can't remember. And they ripped it in half and threw it. And then they gave them another one, they ripped it in half and threw it. And they got a lot of flack on the internet because, they're anti-capitalist and whatever. But like somebody was like, like that money could have been used for whatever. And I remember them saying something to the effect of being like, what? Like, once this money's been in my possession, I'm allowed to do with it what I want. And I don't believe in the fact that I have to be ruled by the fact that this person gave me this amount of money. And I think about that a lot. I think about how I sit on both sides of this coin on this equation. Like, so in my house, I have like $1 bills everywhere because I do a lot of drag. But if I probably got all of them together, it would amount to a lot of money. And so when people come over, they're like, wow, you just don't seem to care about your money. And it's more that I'm a little bit too lazy to like put it all together. But like if I need money, I'll start like gathering it and putting in spaces, and I try to get better about how I put my money and where I put my money. But at the end of the day, the thing is like I can spot a 20 when I'm performing. Whenever I get a 20 when I'm performing, it is like the best day. It like makes me feel so full. It makes me feel like I'm the like best performer in the world because I mean, I sometimes tip people in 20s. I used to do the thing where I would go to the store and like get all ones and 20s so I could dump it on people, like make it rain moments, because I, it's a good point of the song and I love those things. But yeah, that's I it's just a lot about how I was raised. Like we were told no a lot. Like mom, can I get this? No. Mom, can I get this? No. Mom, can I be a part of that? No. Like I remember even in choir when we had to buy a tuxedo. I, all of us had to have a tuxedo, and the tuxedo I think was like $250 or maybe 300. And I remember my mom had to save to get this thing for me, and it was a tuxedo I used for like the majority of my life because it was the only tuxedo I ever owned. So it's just some things to think about. But while we continue on in this conversation, listeners, let's take a moment of silence for those individuals who lost their life. But also, let me know how you're doing in the comments.
It's a podcast.
Check it out.
Tune into what they tell you podcast.
Check
And we're back, listeners. So, in the second half of the show, I want to talk about family commitments. I'm going to be visiting my mom for the next few days. She recently just got out of the hospital, and I was thinking so much about how I'm excited to see her and what it means to be her kid. So, like I mentioned in the first part of the episode, my mom was a single mom. She raised me and my sister. And my parents got divorced when I was two. My dad is still alive. My mom always put a lot of emphasis on who we were going to turn into. She shielded us from the world a lot, probably a little bit too much, in my opinion. But she always tried to make sure we had food on the table, clothes on back, roof overhead. She taught me how to cut the grass. She taught me how to cook. She taught me how to do my laundry. She taught me how to clean. My mom never taught me how to work on a car, even though her and my sister know how to do that. My mom was also the person who would put up Christmas decorations every holiday. She would also decorate the house for Halloween. She would always have candy for the kids. She would always cook a turkey on Thanksgiving. It's funny, as an adult, I have struggled to find time to put up a Christmas tree. I never decorate for Halloween. And good Lord, Christmas lights just run up my bill in the worst way possible. It's just not even a joke. And I tend to really value that piece of her. The one thing that I think that my mom failed at teaching us was in the aspects of love. Now, I talk about love on this podcast a lot, and I think that it has a good deal to do with the fact that there wasn't romantic structures in my life. Like my mom loved us, but my mom never said I love you, which I've mentioned on this podcast before. My mom never she always said she was proud of us for things that, we did. She never said I love you. My dad We did say to our dad a lot, but it's because we were always on the phone with him. And my dad never really showed love in the way that I think parents should show their children love. When, I mean, actually, my dad didn't really show any love, really. So I think I was like starved for love, so much so that I kept looking for it in the wrong places. And I would sometimes take somebody being kind to me as love, and I recognize that that's probably, I mean, the funny thing is kindness and love kind of go hand in hand. And but I was a person who never, for the longest time, said I love you to friends. I remember it was one of my big things in college where my friends would be like, "You never say I love you." And I was like, "Because I don't say that word. That's not a thing that I am looking for." Which is funny, I was consistently looking for love, but I didn't want to say it to anybody. And then the people that I would like, I remember the first guy I was ever attracted to, and he toyed with my feelings because he knew that I liked him, which is kind of what started me on this path of being like this wise love person, was the fact that this person made me feel special enough. But I also kind of was figuring out that they were just like, they loved the fact that I was so into them. Which I feel like even in my adult life now, I feel like people gravitate towards me because they like how interested I am in them, which is toxic in every which way of the word. But going back to my family, my mom never dated really. She did date when I was in my 20s. I'm 30. I'm about to be 37 now. My mom did date when I was in my 20s, but like as a kid, like for all 20 years of my life, my mom never dated. She was focused on her career, her kids, and keeping a roof over our head. And she did great jobs in all of that. My mom is a very strong, independent Black woman. She always has been. And I think she taught me how to be strong. She taught me how to be sensitive, which I think are two things that are great and also a curse. Things in the world do get to me, as we obviously learned in the first part of this episode. But I think I value the fact that things get to me. I think I value the fact that I cry at sad movies. I value the fact that I know that if my husband were to ever pass away, it would destroy my soul. I value the fact that when my friendships aren't where they need to be, it breaks me a little bit. I value the fact that I feel like I offer a lot in romantic relationships because of my emotional stability to other people. You know, I was talking to some friends of mine recently where I had made this comment about attractiveness. And I had posted this thing online that basically says, like, I reshared a thing that said, "Hey, gay people, like, you know, you can be kind to people that you're not attracted to." And I feel like this has been a recurring theme in my life. I feel like people that are really kind to, like, I feel like the hot person was very unkind to me a lot of the time. But then I would have hot people who would cling to me because of my emotional stability. And I remember I would misread interactions with hot people as them liking me, which obviously wasn't the case, and end up with egg on my face. I remember the first boy I actually ever hit on, I tried to hold his hand in college and he moved it away. And so I texted him because I've always been pretty blunt in my dating life. And said, "Hey, I think you're attractive." And there's a skinny little white, blonde-haired twink dude, and he was obviously not interested, and it kind of made our relationship fizzle after that. And the thing is, I didn't actually even know what I wanted from romantic encounters from men. I just knew that I was attracted to them. And what really sucked about this is I didn't know. I used to actually believe that if you were gay, you could not actually have love because the media teaches us that you are not allowed to have love, right? If you're gonna have fall in love, it's gonna be man, woman, woman, man, right? 3.5 kids. And so you don't deserve love unless it fits into that mold. And that was really hard for me to dismantle. Like I always talk about on this podcast nowadays is like the continual unlearning about who we are as people is real, really real. And so we have to just keep making promises to ourselves to be kind to ourselves. The thing is, I can give you a rule book on how to find love, and I can give you a guide to accepting yourself in love. But the one thing that you actually have to do before you do any of that is recognize that you might actually feel like you deserve those things. And I have a lot of people in my life who feel like they don't. So work on that part. Work on that part for sure. How I want to end it is, I love my mom. She's the greatest person alive, and she taught me those things that I mentioned earlier. But there's one thing that I know in my heart of hearts that she taught me because of, like, you know, some things you learn from your parents because they were so negative. My mom also taught me how to hold my temper because she always lost hers, and so did my dad. And I believe I've said many, many times, I don't believe snapping in a relationship. I also don't believe in snapping at family members, and I try hard not to. I try to be a good person most of the time. A friend of mine told me earlier today, they said, Coco, you don't like when people are mad at you. I don't think most people like when people are mad at them. But she had asked me, she said, do you not like when somebody's mad at you because you hurt them, or do you not like that they're mad at you because you don't like feeling that way? And I had to think about it, and I said, it's a little bit of both. I like to think of myself as a kind person who can work on situations with people and conflict resolution, but I'm also recognizing that maybe I just don't like when people don't like me. And so as I grow into whatever I'm going to turn into, especially with this podcast, I'm going to consistently try to work hard at being a kinder person. I think I owe it to myself. I owe it to my mom. I owe it to the people around me, because as I eventually start having my own family, recognizing and learning from the lessons that my mom gave me, then, you know, maybe when my kiddo one day is doing a podcast or whatever it's going to turn into in the future, they're going to be like, well, my dad taught me to be kind. And they taught me to be strong, and they taught me that it's okay to be vulnerable, and they shielded me from the world, but they made me strong enough to deal with the things when they came. So, yeah. I guess that's it. Thanks for listening, listeners.
Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.